In the old days, a few scientists used to make the journey every summer. But in 2024, 125,000 tourists went to Antarctica. It's quite straightforward once you pay out a fortune for your tickets. Then you fly to South America, hop on a boat for a very bumpy ocean crossing, and within a couple of days, you're walking with penguins, listening to humpbacks roar, and watching icebergs drift by in a bright blue sea. This pristine world is protected by treaty, and tourism operators insist they follow all the rules. But as the numbers of tourists grow year by year, there's a growing concern about the impact on the Antarctica of so many people. Can hundreds of boats really sail these waters and hundreds of thousands of people clamber ashore without harming the place? Professor Anne Hardy leads the Antarctic Tourism Research Program at the University of Tasmania. And to discuss that question, she joins me now. Anne, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you very much for having me.
Anne, I haven't. You have been there. What's it like?
Oh, it's a beautiful place. I think the way that you described it is really great, was quite perfect. It's a magnificent, mountainous, bright, harsh, exhilarating environment down there. It's a place that I can barely describe. You feel like you're in a bit of a lonely club after you've been down there because it's such a magnificent place and your senses are so heightened because of the brightness and the coldness and the sharpness and the clarity of the air. So it's a really profound place to be able to visit.
Who goes there?
That's a good question. I mean, as you mentioned before, traditionally it was all about scientific endeavor and discovery when, you know, up until about the 1950s. And then after the 1950s, tourism began. And at the beginning, it was, you know, tourists on often retrofitted icebreakers who went down there. But in the last 10 years, the type of person that goes down there has really changed. We've seen large ships that are actually built specifically for the conditions to break through the ice, be steady in the high seas, but keep the passengers comfortable. And the prices are coming down. So some people go there, the people who go there are people who have had a long-term interest and love of Antarctica. Other people who go down there are really motivated to just see the seventh continent and sort of they're what we might call bucket listers. And there are other people who go down there for they're really interested in last chance tourism to see the place that they believe is in trouble. And we also have people who go down there who are having a profound experience in their life. They might be towards the end of their life. They might have just suffered a massive loss and they're the types of people who go down there to really sharpen their sense of living and live out a dream at the same time.
I know a few people have been there and they all come back filled with wonder. They seem to be changed in some way. Does it change people? Does the effect last?
Yes, I think it does. I think the experience is so different that I think for many people it can change the way that they see the world. And the reason why is that it's just so grand. There's no one there. And the journey, that 2 days across the Drake Passage, if you're traveling from South America, it's a hard journey. I mean, once you're down there, you really can't turn back. So if something goes wrong with your friends and family or yourself, you're not going to be able to get home easily. So you go through a psychological process to get down there. And then when you get down there, this scenery and the sounds and the sights are so massive and grand that I think it does change a lot of people after they've been down there.
But you get down there on a boat that's burning carbon.
Yes, that's the thing. And this is where this big dilemma comes in. I mean, many of the ships are now what they call hybrid ships. So they burn less carbon, but still they're burning a lot of carbon. And it's not just the ships, it's actually the plane flight to get to the ships that burns up a lot of carbon. And this is where we have this big juxtaposition or this big dilemma going on that, you know, we can take people down there and we can give them a profound experience that makes them realize that, yes, this world is changing and it's we need to change our behavior to protect our world. But at the same time, to get them down there, we have to do the thing that we're going down to learn, you know, is ruining the country, the earth. So it's a very, it's filled with contradictions.
But that's true of tourism everywhere, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, a plane to Paris burns an awful lot of carbon.
Yes, exactly. That's the problem. And so what we've been really doing is kind of looking at the growth of this industry and going, okay, if it burns a lot of carbon, can we, you know, what else comes out of it? Is there good that comes out of it? And also with this growth, can we try and encourage the form of tourism that is down there to be very respectful rather than becoming mass tourism? And that's kind of where our concerns and our research interests lie.
What does your research tell you about the impact of the people when they're there?
Our research tells us that for some people, it's a profound impact. So we know that a lot of people that already go down there are quite interested. So there's one segment that goes down there who are already interested in the environment, in the climate, and trying to sort of live a low-impact life. And what we see when we follow them over time, so we interview them before they've gone down, we interview them on the trip home when they're going north on the Drake Passage, and then months later. And what we can see is that some people actually change their behaviour. So they go home, the experience is so profound, they might start supporting an NGO, or they might start attending Antarctic events. So we can actually see that behaviour change occurs. But what we're worried about is that it doesn't always happen for all people, and it's also seems to be quite dependent on the style of tourism that's going on down there. And so that's where our interest lies, is how can we maximise the impact of this trip on people's behaviour when they go home?
But there's an earlier question, isn't there, which is how do we protect that environment from these people?
Yes.
Friends of mine were telling me that when they were going down there, even the Velcro straps on their shoes were scrubbed in case a tiny seed might be lodged there. What precautions are taken to make sure that anybody who's landing on the continent is clean?
They're amazing precautions, actually. And this is one of these incredible things about Antarctica is that Antarctica is, governed by the Antarctic Treaty System. But the way in which tourism runs down there is regulated actually by the industry itself and through the International Association of Tour Operators. So that's called IATO. And they set regulations that require the companies to do that. I mean, you have to vacuum your clothes. You have to pick out the bottom of your boots that are provided to you by the company with a toothpick. And then you have to walk through a bath, just disinfect your shoes before you go to land on Antarctica. And you also, you have to pick the Velcro out. So, and many of the companies take this so seriously. And because of the seriousness of how they take it, they actually create sort of their own police force amongst the tourists who really take that activity quite seriously. And, you know, if they see someone who's not doing the right thing, they'll be like, oh, I've seen someone. So I think...
Dob them in.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's actually working really well. So...
But are those regulations actually enforced? I mean... Are people being punished companies being punished that fail to live up to their obligations?
No, not so much. And I think that, majority of the companies are pretty good, particularly the larger ones. It's probably what we see, you know, some of the problems are things like people who go down there in their yachts or perhaps companies
that are
not...
What, they sail down in their yachts?
Yes, they do. There's a lot of people who go down in their yachts.
They deserve the fate of Shackleton.
They do. Well, I mean, I just... think it's unbelievable that they do it. But yeah, I think, you know, there are issues. I've been down there and seen human feces down there. And this summer, there was actually graffiti that was put on one of the cultural heritage sites. So we are beginning to see these kind of transgressions, if you like, and almost environmental crimes. So that's one of the big problems. But like you mentioned before, the other problem is, you know, do we manage this place like a national park? So many national parks have places where they kind of say, okay, we'll kind of sacrifice that area. We'll allow visitors to go there and to see the magnificence of this place and how magnificent it is, but then we'll actually really protect other places. And that's what we're kind of, you know, looking at in Antarctica. At the moment, most of the tourism occurs in a small area. Like if you clenched your fist and you put your thumb up, the peninsula is really about kind of the size of your thumbnail when it comes out of your fist. And so there's a very small area where tourism occurs.
The fist being Antarctica.
That's right.
I shall never think of my fist the same way again. But isn't this the thin end of the wedge? I mean, when you start building facilities, they're forbidden at the moment, aren't they?
Correct. That's right. Yes. And what we're starting to see, and this is what happens in tourism, where it starts to grow, that in any other destination, it's not just, you know, Antarctica. But as it goes from niche to mass, you start to see kind of fudging around the edges. So at the moment, you're not allowed to have accommodation down there. But we're starting to see scientific structures used for tourism accommodation. We're starting to see the diversification of the industry. So you can go down there on a, you know, there was like a swingers cruise. You can go on a dentist's leadership cruise. You can go on, you know, all these themed cruises. You can do marathons down there or
ocean swimming. Marathons.
Yes.
Again, friends of mine were with a marathon group and they would go off. They weren't able to actually run for 26 miles across the ice, but they ran round and round and round all day on the ice.
Exactly.
You also mentioned LGBTQ plus groups.
Yes.
What do they do on the ice?
Well, I haven't been on the trips down there, so I can't really say, but I do know there was also a Doof Doof cruise. But I mean, it's a Doof Doof cruise, like a disc, you know, like Doof Doof music. So,
oh, hell.
So I think for me, you know, with the LGBTQI plus crews, that's probably just for those people to feel safe, and that's fair enough. I kind of get that. But what we worry is that the values are being eroded. So if the cruise is not centered around education and teaching people about the values of Antarctica, that's when we start to get worried. So when the diversification occurs, it makes us worry that perhaps the cruises are not really there for education. Maybe they're more just to kind of like satisfy egos and for hedonistic, you know, reasons.
And therefore you fear that people will be more careless.
That's right. And the values of Antarctica are eroded. So, you know, it might be that they're still very good with picking the bits of, you know, dust out of their Velcro.
Well, LGBTQ plus, of course, perfect in that.
Absolutely. But not
their,
that I want to...
Their Velcro management is renowned.
That's right. But it's the values that we worry about. Because once you start thinking, oh, you know, it's like Venice. There's just so many people there. And what we know is those social norms affect the way in which people behave at destinations. So if we start to kind of think of something as ruined, then we might actually treat it as if it's ruined. And that's what we don't want to happen with Antarctica.
I'm talking to Anne Hardy, Professor of Tourism and Society at the University of Tasmania. And there's also the boats themselves. One of the fears, I understand, is smoke from the boats.
That's right. That's right. So cruise ships are well known for the fumes that come out of them and the impacts that they can cause. The good thing about the Antarctic tourism industry is that they are, you know, bringing in ships that really do reduce the amount of emissions, but they're hybrid ships that kind of run on this sort of hybrid fuel and electricity, so they're very quiet and they don't put off enough as much emissions. But there are still ships that are going down there where, you know, black fume is coming off and the concern is that that is going to actually, you know, land on the ice and have impacts in that way as well. So
among the early boats, as I understand it, that got tourists down there were ex-Soviet icebreakers. Now they're going to be filthy as.
Absolutely. There's still a few down there, I believe. They're slowly being phased out and the operators, I think most of them are fairly uncomfortable with using them now. But yes, they were very much the, that's how tourism began down there on a lot of it, you know, the popular form of cruise tourism began on those Russian icebreakers.
There's also the question of global warming. The area becomes more vulnerable, doesn't it, the warmer it gets?
Yes, that's right. So, the problem is that with global warming, that it actually increases the risk because you've got large glaciers down there and you've also got icebergs. There's actually a massive iceberg at the moment heading towards South Georgia. I can't remember the name. It's like A something or other. And so what you see as the water warms...
I think it's A23A.
Thank you very much.
No.
That's right, yes. Yeah, probably right. So... And so with that is risk, because when a glacier calves, there's a big wave that comes off and that can actually tip over a zodiac. And the water down there is only sort of 0, 1, 2 degrees. And you don't live for very long when you're flipped over from a glacier calving and a little wave coming off it. So it increases the risk for visitors.
But that's only going to increase the allure of the Antarctic,
well,
isn't it?
Yeah, this is the problem with tourism, isn't it? Because when you think about why we travel, like if you get to the core of why we travel, many of us travel for kind of ego and to prove ourselves or to show that we've done something that's interesting and to differentiate ourselves from our peers.
There's a lot of walking across Dorset at the moment, for instance.
Yes, well, that's right. I didn't know about the walking across Dorset.
Yeah. Yes. It's everywhere.
Yes, yeah. So, and that's the thing is that, you know, for people who are just going down there to step on the continent, to touch it, wave the flag and go home, it doesn't really line up with the values of Antarctica being all about, you know, science and research. So that's what those people, we want to turn them into environmental advocates when they go home. Mm. And we can do that.
But you can't really vet the motives of the people who want to go down there, can you? I mean...
No.
What are the values of Antarctica? When I was a kid, it was heroic tragedy, wasn't it?
Yes, totally.
It was Shackleton's boat being crushed in the ice. It was It was somebody going out, and I may be a little time. It was Scott. It was death.
Mawson eating his dog, I think, wasn't it? And or they used to get vitamin poisoning for
the livers.
Yes, that's right.
I have known since I was about 8 years old not to eat the liver of a sled dog.
That's right, exactly. We all grew up, well, many of us in the kind of, you know, that Anglo-Saxon world, we grew up with
these
stories.
Oh, it was really imperial, wasn't it? It's
very
really imperial.
Very much. And that's, you know, that's one of the problems with it. It's this imperial white conquest sort of storylines that go with it. And that it's a very, you know, people are very much motivated still by those stories, and they are absolutely incredible stories. But what we want to do is to maintain, you know, Antarctica being known as a very difficult place to get to, a very special place, and also the place where we really see the impacts of climate change. So if people can go down there and really see it for themselves, then that is probably got more likelihood of changing their behaviour afterwards. We can't change their motives, but we can actually change their behaviour afterwards to some extent if we can provide them with great education about the values of Antarctica.
We'll spend all that money, we'll endure the greatest seasick passage in the world, and when we get there, we will become better people.
I would hope so. That's my goal.
Anne, we're with you at Late Night Live. I've been talking to Anne Hardy, who is the Professor of Tourism and Society at the University of Tasmania. She is She is also chair of Destination Southern Tasmania, and she is investigating the impact of these hundreds of thousands of human beings who are suddenly turning up on the coldest shelf of land on Earth. And thanks so much for joining us on Late Night Live.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, absolute pleasure.